New Hampshire is number 47 in our States of the Union series, and joining me now to discuss what matters to voters in the Granite State is Josh Rogers, a political reporter at New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello, Josh.
Hi, Leonard. Good to be with you.
New Hampshire's primary has been important in a lot of presidential races over the last 30 years, but the last two presidents, Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, both lost their New Hampshire primaries. So how good an indicator is it these days?
Well, I'm not sure how good an indicator the primary is. The general election, the last three of the four contests have gone Democratic, which I think is important to note in terms of looking at where we're headed coming up. I mean, certainly, Barack Obama was defeated in the primary here by Hillary Clinton fairly narrowly. Polls had shown that he was up, and he certainly had a lot of momentum coming out of Iowa. John McCain, New Hampshire launched him this time and, kind of briefly launched him in 2000 before, he fell to earth in South Carolina. So historically, New Hampshire has been a reasonable bellwether. I think it's fair to say that the import of winning the New Hampshire primary has declined a bit, although with the presidential primary schedule that was as telescoped in as it was last time, anything that gives you momentum is helpful in such a short schedule, though the Dems had obviously dragged on a lot longer than anyone had thought.
Should Obama be encouraged that so many people showed up for the Democratic primary, a lot more than for the Republicans in January?
I think he should, and I think he should also be encouraged that both he and Senator Clinton actually received more votes from independent voters or unaffiliated, as they're called up here, than did John McCain. Independents tend to decide elections here. Right now, the split in terms of party enrollment is about 31% Dem, 30 or 31% Republican, and 38% undecided. And to win elections here, you have to carry the independents. And it's a little misleading because most independents tend to lean in a reasonably pronounced fashion, towards one party or another. But you can't win a close election here without doing well among the independents.
So why is New Hampshire listed as one of the swing states in November? Is it because John McCain is more popular than most Republicans?
Yes. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, obviously, the last week or so, with the economic news, it's hurt McCain nationally, and it seems to be hurting him here as well. I mean, if you look at an average of the recent polls, Barack Obama's up by 10%. John McCain does have a special rapport with New Hampshire. I think it's fair to say he spent a lot of time campaigning up here in both 2000 and during the primary this year. He, held over 100 town hall meetings. People are comfortable with him. And in both cases, though, if you look at it in terms of running in a primary is obviously different than in a general election. And in both times, he was sort of seen as a more insurgent candidate, which allows him to promote his, kind of for lack of a word, I guess his sort of branding or positioning as a maverick sort of fellow. And it's hard to know if people think that of him as much these days, but he's somebody who does better here than any other Republican. There's no doubt about that.
But you've also suggested that the state is changing. Is it because of changing demographics, or is it because the Manchester Union leader no longer has William Loeb as its crusading conservative owner, writing all of those inflammatory editorials against liberals?
Well, the union leaders, still write some pretty tough editorials, not quite as inflammatory as in the past, but, I mean, the publisher, Joe McQuaid, he'll take to the front page with an editorial, criticizing Democrats or Republicans with whom he doesn't agree. I do think that the influence of the union leader isn't what it was, but I think the bigger issue is that more people, New Hampshire has changed. More people have moved into the state. A lot of those migrants, at least the ones that have come up from the middle Atlantic states, are more politically liberal. And, if you look at the state, it does fit a more Democrat-leaning profile at this point. It's certainly still a very white state. It's one of the whitest states, but it's a state with a, high per capita income, high education. If you look at the map in terms of red versus blue, it's certainly, of the New England states, it's the most swing, but things have been looking up here. I mean, in 2002, for instance, Republicans had an 11% edge in enrollment. As I mentioned before, it's now negligible. Most of four out of the last five governors have been Democrats, at least in terms of their individual terms served. And Democrats in 2006 had a huge year here. How much of that was, it's widely attributed to opposition to the Iraq War, but they carried the governor's office by a record margin, unseated two Republican congressmen, and now control the both houses of the legislature, and the governor's office for the first time since the 19th century. And so if you listen to pollsters and demographers, they say that New Hampshire is, if not entirely, a Democratic state, is headed in that direction.
Are there regional voting differences within the state?
There are. Certainly along the Massachusetts border, where there are a lot of people who have moved here from Massachusetts to get out of Massachusetts, basically, because the tax climate is different. New Hampshire has no general sales or general income tax, and that's historically been a very big deal. It's referred to as the New Hampshire advantage, and one thing that the union leader and William Loeb and his successors have promoted a great deal is that if you're going to run for statewide office and you don't take the pledge, which is, I oppose a sales and income tax, and if I'm running for governor, I'm going to veto one, it's very hard to win. Only one governor in the last couple decades has managed to win without taking the pledge, and that was Jean Shaheen, who's now running for the Senate, and that was only in her third term. The present occupant of the corner office, John Lynch, who's a Democrat, he takes the pledge. So taxes are a big deal, and along the southern part of the state, that issue is potent, and up north there are Republicans. But in most of the cities, Manchester has it's a bit more socially conservative. Both the newspaper and there's also a heavy Catholic population, which tends to be socially conservative and lean fiscally conservative as well. But regionally up north tends to be Republican dominated, and down south in the cities it's more Democrat.
But the lack of taxes led the state Supreme Court to rule in 1997 that the state's school financing system was unconstitutional. How has the state government responded to that ruling?
Well, you can debate that. They've responded very slowly. That's still pending. The court, there have been a series of rulings in the Claremont decisions that, the bottom line at this point is that the court has made clear that the state has to define an adequate education, figure out what that costs, pay for it using proportional taxes, meaning you can't pay for it on variable rate local property taxes, and provide some sort of accountability provision which will allow the delivery of an adequate education to be verified. And pretty much every governor who's been elected since that decision came down has sought to amend the Constitution, amend it in various ways, but essentially to give the state greater leeway in terms of, targeting state aid to communities that need it more. And, that's been a problem for every governor. And it's hard to know, though, among the public, when that decision first came down and it caused the imposition of a statewide property tax, that was a huge, huge issue. Lots of kind of Sturm und Drang, hair-pulling, stress at the legislature. Now I think most people would fairly say it's more along the lines of managing a chronic condition is sort of the posture taken by most political leaders. It's always raised as though that's going to drive New Hampshire into an income tax. That hasn't happened yet. Governor John Lynch, who's, right up there with anybody in terms of political popularity, he's at about 70% approval rating. He's twice proposed constitutional amendments to give the state greater leeway and to diminish the court's oversight of the process, and they've been voted down by the legislature, who's, the lawmakers are perhaps best poised to know that, trusting the state on this one isn't a great idea by big margins. And so where that's going from here, it's kind of hard to say. The court has stood down on it a little bit. It's been reasonably patient, but it's also been firm about what it expects. But Governor Lynch, who is running and is expected to romp again, he's not necessarily even saying he's going to propose another amendment.
Now, you talked about problems for governors. Isn't the fact that New Hampshire is the only state besides Vermont to give its governor just a two-year term a problem for every governor? What effect does that have? Do governors get much done in the course of a single term, or are they most likely going to be reelected term after term?
Well, they don't necessarily get as much done as they might, and there's been a push and pull over whether or not to amend the Constitution to expand to a four-year term. That never gets particularly far. It's also true that people in New Hampshire don't necessarily like government to do a lot, and so in some ways it's a good fit. It has been an issue and will continue to do so, but there have been calls certainly about people saying, you know, government would be more efficient, and New Hampshire rates very low. There was a study put out by the Pew Center about efficiency in government, and New Hampshire was among the least efficient states in the nation in terms of governmental efficiency. The governor doesn't have much power. In addition to the legislature, there's also what's called the Executive Council, which has to approve a governor's appointments to run state agencies and approve judges, and there are five members, and they also have to approve every state contract that exceeds $5,000. So things move slowly.
Yeah, but I guess that's all part of the same libertarian streak that we connect to New Hampshire, including New Hampshire resisting passing a mandatory seatbelt law, the only state that hasn't passed one. Do people not worry about dying in car crashes in New Hampshire, or are they not driving in New Hampshire?
I think they drive and they do worry. There is this strain of sort of New Hampshire exceptionalism, which it persists. The fight over the seatbelt is sort of a ridiculous one. I mean, the state does lose a modest amount of highway funding for that, and the fellow who has actually been the longtime head of highway safety, who is the son of former Governor Meldrum Thompson, who's, you know, was a very conservative sort of iconic figure in New Hampshire, loathed by liberals and lionized by conservatives. You know, he's the head of the Highway Safety Bureau, and he says that he doesn't believe that that mandatory seatbelts are a good idea. It's an odd situation. Every other state official, but the governor himself, he's a cautious man, but he views it as a volatile enough issue, so he hasn't come out and taken a stand that we need seatbelts. I mean, the statistics do show that seatbelt use is up.
Well, there's a governor of New Jersey who would tell you that you should wear a seatbelt, John Corzine. He spent a lot of time in the hospital because he wasn't wearing one.
That came up during the debate, but, you know, the bill didn't pass.
You mentioned Jean Shaheen. She's involved in the Senate race with the incumbent Republican Senator John E. Sununu, and that race has got a lot of attention. Is she likely to unseat him? He won by just 20,000 votes in 2002.
It's looking pretty good for her at this point. I mean, the average of the polls show her up about 5.5%, and you know, she's a sort of a very centrist Democrat, a partisan who sort of made her way in politics originally as a strategist. She worked for Jimmy Carter, Gary Hart, worked for John Kerry. She's a very moderate politician, sort of almost terminally so, and she took the pledge on taxes. She's she vetoed a bill that was, or threatened to veto a bill that was going to repeal the New Hampshire death penalty, which was unpopular with many in her party, and anti-broad-based tax. And when she, when John Sununu beat her in 2002, Republicans were really riding high. They enjoyed an edge in party enrollment. George Bush was very popular. He came up here and campaigned for John Sununu. It was not too long after September 11th. It was kind of during the sort of Karl Rove's heroic period as a strategist among Republicans. She was up in the polls, and, John Sununu is a formidable campaigner. He's an intelligence father with the governor here, and then, the chief of staff to the first George Bush. It's looking good for her, and her whole campaign this time was essentially in 2002, John Sununu ran against my 6 years as governor, ran against the school funding issue, ran against her record. She had proposed a sales tax as one way to alleviate the tax pressure from school funding, and on the ticket for the Democrats in the governor's race that year was a fellow who was advocating a state income tax, and he faced a former high-tech entrepreneur who spent $12 million to get elected in a state with 1.3 million people, and Republicans just romped up and down the ticket. The Shaheen Sununu race was really the only close race, and now the contest is, Jean Shaheen says John Sununu voted with George Bush 90% of the time, and John Sununu says, I vote with New Hampshire 100% of the time, and let me enumerate the ways I'm different from George W. Bush, and he points to disputes with Bush over the Real ID program, which kind of gets to New Hampshire's standardized ID driver's license system. It is a potent issue up here, or at least has been. He differed with him on the Patriot Act. He was the first senator to say that Alberto Gonzalez must go. But, you know, on the economic issues, which are at the fore at the moment, John Sununu hasn't differed with George Bush too much. He hasn't differed with him on Iraq, which is still reasonably potent. And he's also doesn't really differ with him much on abortion, which hasn't been a big issue so far. But the state's basically pro-choice, and I would anticipate Jean Shaheen and her allies are going to start bringing that up.
So the bailout is a major issue. It turns out the other senator, Republican Judd Gregg, played a large role in negotiations over the financial rescue bill. You mentioned that as an issue, and the war in Iraq, which is playing a part in a race for New Hampshire's first congressional district, where the Democrat Carol Shea Porter, who was a strong anti-war candidate in her first campaign, is running again. She's facing her opponent from 2 years ago, Jeb Bradley. Are the Democrats likely to win on because of those issues?
Well, I mean, one thing on the bailout, I mean, we can talk about Jeb Bradley and Carol Shea Porter, but on the bailout, one thing that I find interesting is that both Carol Shea Porter, who represents essentially the eastern half of the state, you know, cut straight down top to bottom, and Paul Hodes, who is in the second district, he's in a more comfortable position in terms of getting reelected. They both voted against the bailout. Jean Shaheen says she would have voted against the bailout had she been in the Senate. A lot of people up here think that given how moderate she is and given that party leaders in the Senate voted for it, that had she been in the Senate, she probably would have voted for it. But, you know, she's not the incumbent, so she doesn't have to vote, and she's saying she would have voted against it. Judd Gregg did champion it. John Sununu voted for it, and you know, the Democrats are taking essentially a united front on that this really isn't our problem, and that this is you know, that the consequences of the economic turmoil are vast, but that you know, they're trying to sort of pawn this off as entirely a Republican issue. And you know, it's, you know, Sununu's said that this shows that Jean Shaheen doesn't show leadership, and But none of the congressional candidates, the Republicans also say they wouldn't have supported the bailout. So it's a very weird dynamic on that front.
There are rematches in both the New Hampshire first and in the Senate race. Does having the same cast of characters have an effect on New Hampshire state politics because the state only has 1.3 million people?
Well,
so
it does,
small?
It does. I mean, in the first congressional district, I mean, when Carol Shea Porter defeated Jeb Bradley, as you noted, it's believed that it was largely fueled by anti-war sentiment. She took him by surprise, and she also took her opponent in the Democratic primary, who was sort of looked upon favorably by both national Democrats who gave him money and campaigned with him before he won the primary, and people thought Jeb Bradley was going to win. She's a former social worker. She was very anti-war, lots of grassroots support, very little money. One factor that is believed to have contributed to her victory was straight ticket voting, which has since been repealed. Democrats profited by straight ticket voting, which they, you know, had railed against for years. And then when they got in there, they did, you know, follow through and get rid of it, even though it had benefited them. And you know, that race, it's hard to know what's going to happen there. Basically, Jeb Bradley was, you know, fairly mainstream Republican. He's pro-choice, and you know, not some sort of crazy ideologue. Had been a state lawmaker and was seen as a moderate. When he headed to Washington, he did become more conservative. And you know, what you hear from him is basically talk about taxes and veterans. And you know, the Republicans, they really don't like Carol Shea Porter. I mean, they often speak of her as either, you know, almost as kind of combination of Nancy Pelosi and Cindy Sheehan, which, you know, isn't necessarily fair. But, you know, last week the National Political Action Committee of the VFW endorsed her, and, you know, she broke with leadership on the bailout bill. And you hear a lot locally, I mean, I guess you're hearing it somewhat on the presidential level too, but in terms of, there's been a lot of bickering back and forth between the candidates about, you know, who stood up to the leaders in their party and how much did they do so.
Josh, just one more thing before you go. If you had to put some money down on it, what would you predict? Barack Obama, John McCain?
I think it's looking pretty good for Barack Obama at this point.
Josh Rogers is a political reporter at New Hampshire Public Radio. Thank you so much for talking about New Hampshire with us.
You're welcome.
Up next, Al and Larry Ubell answer your home repair questions. Also, I wanted to alert you to a special program that will be broadcast tomorrow afternoon. This American Life will be breaking down this huge and confusing financial crisis for us. So join us for the special, another frightening show about the economy. And afterwards, stay here for All Things Considered and the Financial 411 with Amy Eddings. It all starts tomorrow afternoon at 3 on 93.9 FM WNYC.